This week, we're really excited about a new anthology of essays by rock critic Jessica Hopper. It's called The First Collection of Criticism by a Living Female Rock Critic. I hope you can hear the irony dripping. The book follows Hopper's more than 20-year career as a music writer. It also explores how music has informed her politics over the years, beginning with her discovery of the Riot Girl punk movement in the early 90s. She recently talked with producer Craig Ely about feminist consciousness and why she thinks music scenes are pushing women to the margins.
My start as a critic was that I was reading in all these local music papers in Minneapolis about Babes in Toyland, who were starting at the time, and I was, you know, number one fan. And they were writing, saying, you know, they're caustic and they're screaming and they're amateur, as if it was a bad thing. And I was like, but no, that's like the gift of punk rock. You guys don't get it. And I called around and offered to write a corrective. And people would say, well, how old are you? And I was like, I'm 15. And they're like, well, have you ever written before? I was like, homework, you know. But people all but hung up on me. But I was like, well, I have as much right to be here, whether I'm an amateur, whether I'm a pro, whether I'm a grown-up or whether I'm a 10th grader. And I was sort of indignant that, like, what, you can't be an amateur in, like, this sort of punk space, this punk world? That's the whole point.
But in addition, I guess, for you, you express this, one of the things that made your punk revelation so powerful was that you were also seeing women on stage, maybe for the first time.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd been going to shows for about a year and mostly just seeing guys on stage. And I knew that punk rock was kind of the thing that I was interested in. I liked some bands that were all dudes, you know, The Clash and Replacements were very central to me. But then when I saw Bikini Kill, when I saw Babes in Toyland, when I saw Hole, when I saw The Breeders, you know, all of these bands and certainly a lot of young female local bands to Minneapolis, it said to me that I had permission to be there, that there was space for me. It gave me an idea that I could be a participant rather than just a spectator.
And as things get a little later, you have this essay you wrote about emo culture in 2003. And you have a real worry there that you express in that essay that the female characters in these songs are shallow at best. And it seems like at that moment, you sort of are worried that young women coming up a little bit after you maybe aren't having that same kind of experience or don't have access to that same kind of experience that you had.
When I saw these emo bands and they had very few women in them, if any, I began to really worry that how the women were in these songs and the fact that there weren't women on stage and the way that the dudes in the band sang about women, that they didn't have names or, you know, they were just basically, at best, muses in relation to the guy's own self-discovery. I became worried that it was not just descriptive, that it was prescriptive, and that young women could only see themselves sort of in that way, and that that was their role or their place of value was just in relation to one of these singers.
What struck me about that piece in particular is that this kind of problem, you know, doesn't even seem specific to that scene or even that moment in history. I mean, why do you think we keep having these conversations?
Well, I'm bummed that it's still such an issue. And, you know, when we get into these spaces that, you know, or genres that become dominated by white dudes, particularly of a certain age.
Right.
You know, it marginalizes, it pushes everybody out. And then I think it just becomes kind of a self-perpetuating thing where you're like, well, I don't see a version of me up there. Lots of times I think women or other people who've been marginalized within, you know, music spaces, you have to kind of see yourself up there or a version of yourself to get that permission slip to go, maybe necessarily have that aha moment. And or you have to become so incensed by the lack of someone like you up there that you absolutely throw yourself into it and making a space for yourself within that.
Right. I mean, my question about the conversations made it almost sound like I was blaming the conversations or something. But really, you know, we have these larger systemic issues, right, that have to do with promotion and publication. And it's just still, we're still creating scenes that seem to be largely exclusionary. And that's just really unfortunate. It's really lousy.
Well, one of the things that I think perpetuates a primarily male space in music is that we basically disregard women as being fangirls, so to speak, and perpetuate the stereotype that they're not real fans, that they're just interested in surface ideas or just an image. And young women are the number one purchasers of CDs still and of music in general. And I think that's a pretty good example of a true fan. But we often have this idea that pop music is lesser than rock. And so there's this kind of hierarchy of who is the true fan? What does true fandom look like? Who gets to count? And so then you just wind up with older guys who are interested in virtuosity and, you know, and then it's like the only person who gets to count is like a 45-year-old Jack White superfan.
Right, all right.
You know, something like that, whereas, you know, young women are discouraged from the go because we just are always making fun of, oh, fangirls and you know, like, as if everybody's like a screaming Bieber maniac.
Right. That's like an invalid expression of music, right? Somehow that is the wrong way to like music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the fangirls that I know, the adult fangirls, the teenage fangirls, they know more about music than anyone else I know. And also, it is often fangirl communities. Those are safe spaces where women and other people who are marginalized within the, you know, hierarchy of fandom, that they can have safe spaces to talk about music and to show their expertise. Because I, along with many women I know, have had the experience of you say you like something and some guy who's also a fan of that music basically starts to quiz you and try to make you prove your bona fides. How deep are you? How true is your understanding? And just right there, just sort of squash you down.
Right. I mean, you knew much more about Dinosaur Jr. than a guy who loved Dinosaur Jr., even though your interest in Dinosaur Jr. had a lot to do with his interest in Dinosaur Jr. I love that kind of thing that develops in that essay about your youth.
Well, and also I realized in the course of having these conversations with this guy at 15, 16 years old, was that if I showed him what I really knew and that I knew more than him about the music that he liked, that it would make him go away. Right. And that's sort of like the heart of that essay.
Yeah, and one of the things that just, it floored me, it was something I knew, but that you articulated for me in this collection, was how unbelievably similar some of the conversations are, these kind of national conversations about certain kinds of female musicians, right? I mean, did Courtney Love write her own music? Is Lana Del Rey authentic in some way? And it really hit me hard that it's not just that people are kind of critical of female musicians. It's that they can't even imagine the possibility for women to be talented and independent, right? It's like the whole narrative is, well, there has to be some man back there pulling the strings.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and then we can even take it even further back, you know, Joni Mitchell telling Rolling Stone in 1975 that basically whatever man is in the room with her gets credit for her genius.
Yeah.
You know, that, and we think about Joni Mitchell now and how she, in many people's minds, rightfully has eclipsed many of her peers. Or, you know, the idea that you have to be like, that if somebody even has like a fake name, Lana Del Rey, she has a fake name and she plays songs other people wrote. It's like, do you guys know about Bob Dylan? he has a similar issue, predicament, and he's about, quote unquote, as authentic as it gets.
Right.
And I also just think that's a really old-fashioned view to think of pop as fake and women and people who aren't white dudes with guitars being on the margins of it. I mean, especially in the age of that we are in where, you know, as I was saying, young people come up with, you know, way less Catholic tastes, you know, that they see, you know, hip hop and punk rock and all of these different, you know, genres. It's all just music. Mm-hmm. And I think when we can do that and look at it and not say, oh, this one is more valid than the other, or this is more manufactured, so it's not as good. It is inherently fake because it is manufactured. You know, once we can kind of get out of that mindset and even that sort of mythology about music, everyone gets to count, and you know, we can do away with this hierarchy and Beyonce can be our Bob Dylan, which she rightfully should be.
Jessica, thank you so much.
Oh, good. Thanks.
Jessica Hopper is the editor-in-chief of the Pitchfork Review. Her latest book is called The First Collection of Criticism by a Living Female Rock Critic. Craig Ely talked with her